Reese?
Yeah.
Movies are back.
Ah, yeah, they are. Big time.
Movies are back.
That's what we're called, isn't it?
Movies are back. We're calling it Movies Are Back just because I feel like it's a bit of a joke more than anything that movies are back, but it's like, well, they haven't gone anywhere for the last 120 years except for like, I don't know, a couple of months, 4 years ago, but people are still saying, we're back. I'm like, yeah, sure, we're back. Okay, cool.
So it's like an ironic title.
Yeah, more than anything. Hi, everyone. This is Movies Are Back. It's a weekly news and review podcast where we look at film. We have just civil chats about film. We're not going to be yelling and cursing and doing dumb shit or anything like that. Oh, looks. Whoops. We're not going to be cursing. We're just going to be saying dumb shit. There you go.
I'll be cursing sometimes.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. Yeah. But we're also probably going to talk, I don't know, TV shows sometimes, maybe music, games, comics, all that sort of stuff. Any stuff that we're pretty much interested in with like pop culture or whatever. Yeah, that's the general vibe of it. If anyone out there has listened to the Weekly Planet, yeah, look, I'm very much inspired by those guys. I just kept thinking, I want to do that. And if you're going to steal from anyone, steal from the best, you know?
Never heard of them. Don't care.
I am your host, Christopher John. With me is my co-host today, which is Reese Tarling.
Hey, how you doing, everybody?
There you go.
Yeah, that's my intro.
That's
how
Reese.
You doing?
All right.
Well, I guess the first thing we should talk about is like new stuff, right?
Yes.
We'll start with that and then, yeah. What new stuff should we talk about?
Well, I call this new segment, What's Going On?
What's Going On? Cool.
There you go. Oh, what's going on? What's going on? So I wanted to start it off, unfortunately, on a little bit of a sad note because I heard about this last night. Dame Maggie Smith passed away.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
You didn't know this?
No.
Oh, okay. There,
what
everyone,
the fuck?
Yeah, this is live reaction from Reese. Yeah, she passed away, aged 89.
Oh, wow. Was it the... I know she had breast cancer like 14 years ago.
I don't know.
It's pretty old.
Well, yeah, I think maybe one of those age things kind of went into. She apparently passed away in hospital with her son or son's present. And yeah, I think it was mostly just like a age thing more than anything. At a certain point, you go into the hospital, you don't come out, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. She seemed like such a vital woman, though.
Yes. Well, I think that was always her vibe. It was just she had this kind of vivacious quality. She was everyone in like all the tributes described her as just being very sharp and very always on and was so disarming in her sort of, she would like make people kind of scared, you know. She wasn't this large presence, but she still like had that effect,
gravitas.
I was watching a little clip from making of Harry Potter Philosopher's Stone, and Christopher Columbus was saying like, we needed someone who had that sort of like intimidating quality for Professor McGonagall, but also could be charming and warm in some aspects. I was like, yeah, that's Maggie Smith. That's absolutely Maggie Smith. That's what she always was.
She always reminded me really of my grandma, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
She's everybody's grandma.
Did you ever watch Downton Abbey?
No, I mean, I've seen bits here and there, but yeah. I know that's like the thing she's probably second most famous for,
I would say,
right?
So, yeah. I mean, that's in the headlines. It's like Harry Potter and Downton Abbey actress Dame Maggie Smith passes away or something like that.
Yeah.
But she's been in so many movies. Apparently, she won 2 Academy Awards. I'm looking at it now. Best Actress for The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie in 1969 and Best Supporting Actress for California Suite in 1978. I haven't seen any of those movies.
I don't even know what she looks like as a young person.
She looks quite nice.
Yeah, she does.
It's like...
she didn't look bad as an old person.
No, either. No, not at all. But it's like looking at old pictures of Helen Mirren. You just go, whoa, okay, that's very
Caligula.
Different, but also, damn.
Yeah, look up Caligula, Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
Thank me later.
But yeah, Dame Meg Smith passed away at 89, which is a bit sad, but...
R.I.P.
Yeah. Actually, unfortunately, one of the big things that people had pointed out was she passed away the same day... a year later, as Michael Gambon.
Really?
Second Dumbledore.
Wait, did he die last year?
Yeah.
I thought he died a lot.
No.
5 years ago or something.
No, he died last year.
Oh,
on the 27th of September.
Yeah.
People were like, oh, that's weird. Yeah. That is very weird.
Same day.
Yeah.
I wonder if they're the same age.
No, I think Michael Gambon was a bit younger, because Maggie Smith was around a lot longer than he was.
Like, okay.
He kind of came up, I think, around about the 80s, maybe 70s, but she's been around since the 60s. She was also known for A Room with a View in 1985. A lot of people talking about that one. Hook as well. She was old Wendy in that movie as well. It's like sort of childhood favorite. I don't have much love for that movie, but she's great in it because she was always good in whatever movie she was in, good or bad. I remember watching her in the 1978 Death on the Nile, where she plays, I think, the handmaiden or the servant or whatever, like the sort of person that's helping out the old dowager lady on the Nile cruise. But she's dressed for most of the movie in a black and white tuxedo, and she looks so cool. And a lot of people have been like, you know, she's like a bisexual icon for just looking like that. And I think that's really cool. Nice. She always had that impact.
Yeah,
that's our first news story. It's a bit of a sad one, but we'll move on from there.
Yeah, news to me.
Surprise. Yeah, there you go. I want to do a segment every week, and we're just going to call it AI bullshit. Because there's always news stories about, hey, this person said something about AI, or AI is now doing this with movies or something. It's just... But the news that kind of broke out was James Cameron joins the board of directors for Stability AI.
Yeah.
It's just a company that makes voice-to-text video stuff.
That doesn't surprise me. I mean, he's been in that technology hole for decades now.
Yeah.
And it's so weird. Like, you would think, you know, him being in that hole and on the cutting edge, you'd think, like, the remasters of his movies would look good, but they're like notoriously bad.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure they used AI for like 4K remasters of True Lies and Aliens. Like, people have pointed out, like, frame by frame, you can see like background extras, their faces start just going like blending and morphing weirdly.
I was watching Terminator 2 on Netflix a couple of weeks ago, and the blue hues are terrible.
Yeah.
Like, they're overwhelming, and it looks like dull and washed out and shit.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's weird because James Cameron has said, you know, he made Terminator. Like, he was quoted, I think, last year where, you know, someone was asking him about AI, and he said, look, I made Terminator movies about it, so I'm the authority on it, and I say it's bad. But the reason why he's joined this company, Stability AI, is because the CEO is, his name's Prem Akkaraju, who was previously the CEO of Weta Digital, which did all the visual effects for Avatar. So it's just mates.
Well, you know, Chrissy, he didn't say AI is bad, because if you remember from those movies, they tried to attack Skynet first, and Skynet just retaliated.
Right.
So it's not bad. It's just, you know, they were defending themselves.
Didn't Skynet also destroy the entire planet?
They did it. That was retaliation, because they were going to become extinct first. So then they just, like, were fighting back.
But didn't the humans already built Skynet and weren't able to control it because they didn't know what they were doing? They're playing with
the... They wanted to shut it down,
Promethean
right?
Promethean fire.
Yeah, and they wanted to shut it down. And then Skynet was like, oh, it's like, this is an existential threat to us.
It just feels to me that James Cameron was just thinking, yes, I'm so committed against, you know, ruining human creativity. I'm so united for making sure that people can still tell human stories. Oh, my best mate is the CEO of a new company. Hey, I'm joining these guys. It's going to be great.
Yeah, no, he's a sellout. He endorsed those fucking terrible Terminator sequels.
Yes, we have talked about
and then,
this.
And then he said, like, later, yeah, I just did that for my buddy Arnold.
Yeah.
So it doesn't surprise me. He doesn't care.
He was talking about Terminator Genesis, just saying, like, you know, if you love Terminator, you're going to love this movie.
I'm seeing things I recognize.
I feel like the franchise has been reinvigorated. Like, this is a renaissance. If you like the Terminator films...
Run! I'll be back.
You're going to love this movie.
Then he likes Dark Fate as well. I mean, he wrote Dark Fate.
Dark Fate wasn't terrible.
That was terrible.
You hated it.
I hated it. John Connor thing. Yeah, it was a really uninspired movie. Genesis is worse, though.
Genesis is way worse.
It's a lot worse.
Dark Fate is just, it's just kind of sourceless. It's like watching Transformers Rise of the Beast, where it's all the stuff that you think you'd like in a Terminator or Transformers movie, but there's just something missing. There's just not enough that's happening that you think, oh, wow, look at that.
Linda Hamilton gave an Oscar-worthy performance in Terminator 2.
Yeah.
And then they bring her back for Dark Fate, and it's depressing.
Yeah.
She's so bad in it.
Yeah, she's just... It's one of those things where...
She doesn't care.
She's obviously not worked at all, and then they went, here's a dump trunk full of money. She went, Okay.
You know she's going to be in Stranger Things season 5.
Really?
Yeah, she's going to be some.
I can see other. Her being good in that though, because they.
No, I think she'll be fine in that.
They brought in what's his name, Robert Englund, in was it season 4 or season 3 or something like that? He was like some one-off like guest actor. And he's never been known for like being a great actor. He's always, you know, just been Freddy Krueger or whatever. But I remember watching him in whatever season that was and thinking, oh, wow, that's really cool. I think Stranger Things can do that for some.
No, these... yeah. I mean, Stranger Things, that show somehow gets strong performances out of everybody.
Yeah, definitely.
What's next?
I want to do week to week until it comes out, which is going to be July next year, countdown to James Gunn's Superman.
Oh, cool.
Because, you know, we could do a countdown to a bad movie. Like, we could do a countdown to, like, Kraven the Hunter or...
That could be great. You don't know.
Yeah, sure.
No, it's going to be terrible.
All of the Sony movies have been absolutely amazing. People just didn't understand them. Like Zack Snyder's movies. There you go.
Yeah.
But no, I wanted to do a countdown to James Gunn's Superman because I'm very, very excited for it. There's been a couple of little things about it. Alan Tudyk is apparently going to be in it.
Yeah, I could see him in like a bit role.
Yeah.
Maybe on the Daily Planet stuff.
Do you think it's going to be live action or do you think they're going to do what they've done with him for Disney movies?
Oh, and his voiceover?
Yeah, because someone said, hey, ladies and gentlemen, your voice actor for Crypto the Superdog. I was like, if he is that, that would be very
Crypto
funny.
Can't talk, can he?
No, but it's the same thing as like Frank Welker doing the voice of Scoob, where like he does the voice, but then he also does barking.
Yeah.
He does the barking sounds into a trash can or something like that.
I wouldn't like that. I mean, I want to see his face. Like, when's the last time his face has been in a movie?
I don't know about a movie, but he's been doing a sci-fi series called Resident Alien that is apparently not too bad. It's like a funny...
Yeah,
comedy science fiction.
I hope it's I hope it's not a voice thing. I think that's kind of played out. Yeah, like just using his voice. So I hope he has like some starring role.
I would have liked to have seen him as Guy Gardner. I know Nathan Fillion is going to be Guy Gardner, but
I didn't even know who Guy Gardner was before like this movie was.
He's like the worst Green Lantern. Or something.
He's supposed to be the worst, right? Yeah,
because
he's
like vaguely sort of right wing. And looks awful with his bowl cut.
I think it's
and...
going to be one of those things where James Gunn takes like a really obscure character and just does what he wants with it and makes that character popular somehow.
Absolutely.
He's really good at that.
I mean, well, that's what he's confirmed. Like he said, oh yeah, we're going to have a Green Lantern. We're going to have Hawk Girl in this movie, but also like Mr. Terrific. I know Mr. Terrific is renowned and beloved by DC fans.
Well, hey, I guess.
A lot of people don't know who Mr. Terrific is.
I saw him on that Arrow show.
Oh, okay.
Arrow. He was on that.
Right.
In the later seasons.
Yeah, I never watched Arrow past the first season.
Well, it's not good.
I've only seen like clips of, I don't know, Gorilla Grodd
in Flash.
Talking to Barack Obama. I'm like, okay. And he says, time to make America Grodd again. It's just... insane. Whoever's listening to this and doesn't know what we're talking about, I'm so sorry. We're getting into the weeds of like comic book stuff, but
tying back to the Superman thing, I'm really excited for it. I wonder when a trailer will come out.
I was expecting that they would have done something for Comic-Con, but they were still, I think they'd already finished filming and they were
finished filming now. Apparently they're probably going to do pickups, you know. Soon.
I wouldn't be surprised if they drop something around the time of like Penguin's last episode when that airs, sort of like timing around like, okay, this is the first sort of DC Studios project. Here's the last episode. Stay tuned. Like a sort of sneak peek of what we've got coming up in a sense. I wouldn't be surprised if they do that. Something maybe around when Creature Commandos, the animated series, releases next year.
I think more that.
Yeah.
The Penguin and that stuff doesn't really have much to do. With what James Gunn's doing.
Yeah, but it's still his studio that he's wanting to...
He's
not taking credit, but he's definitely promoting and saying like, you know, hey, look, everyone loves it. Isn't that great? DC Studios, yeah, let's go.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean that, you know, they need all the help they can get.
Yeah, well, they need all the people to kind of be on board.
Be on board.
And
after
not just feel like it's like going to be...
been ruined.
Yeah, well, it's not going to just be, oh, look, they're catching up to Marvel. Now it's more of, I think people who I talk to about this stuff look at it and I tell them, you know, oh, this is happening and they're working on this kind of movie and they think, oh, okay, if it's better than Marvel, cool. Like, I think people are more on board with the idea that it could just be its own thing and not just playing catch up to Marvel in that sense. Because that's what it was like in 2016 when they brought out Batman v Superman the same sort of time around where Civil War was coming out. Yeah, kind of conflated the two.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's not like that now.
No. Yeah. I think it's very diverse now, which is good in a sense. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
We got new trailers, though, for Thunderbolts and Last of Us Season 2, which I think Thunderbolts look really cool. Yeah. Did you watch the trailer?
Yeah, I wasn't into it.
No?
Not really. I don't know. I think they think, like Marvel at this point, that they get these characters together and that's like a selling point. But I don't think that's true anymore. Like, especially when these characters aren't particularly popular. Like the Florence Pugh, Black Widow, David Harbour as the Guardian.
Yeah, Red Guardian.
You know, Bucky is in that, which is, you know, it's cool to see Bucky.
In doing sort of like more dark stuff. That's what a lot of people are calling out.
I don't know. It just looks like kind of bland, like that Captain America trailer.
A little bit. I liked at least, I don't know, just watching it sort of visually. It does look like, there's a lot more color grade. People are pointing this out that it actually, it doesn't have that sort of Marvel type sheen on it because it's shot by the guy who shot the Green Knight. And there's a sort of, I don't know, with some of the action stuff, you see like in the, there's a bit.
No, yeah, I'll give you that. It does look visually better.
Yeah. Than I think
a typical Marvel movie.
Story wise, I'm still a little,
I don't know what the hook is, except, oh, like all these characters are together.
It kind of does, in a sense,
played out for Marvel now. That's not like exciting anymore.
It kind of feels like Marvel's Suicide Squad. A lot of people kind of,
and who cares about that?
Yeah. And that's where such a
fucking,
I'm just very curious to see what the general sort of vibe is. I think that's what they're doing with the little asterisk. That is a little bit of a hook to say.
There's an asterisk in the title.
There's something else going on that's not just what you think it's going to be. It's like, okay, we had to. How familiar are you with the Thunderbolts from the comics and stuff?
You know, I've read comic books where they're like in it in kind of a background way.
Yeah,
but like, admittedly, I'm not that familiar with them.
Do you know what the big twist of them is?
I don't know, like they're the Dark Avengers or something.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is.
Is that what the asterisk is going to mean?
Well, that's what I think. So, like, you know, they show in the trailer that they're going to Avengers Tower, which a lot of people suspect could have been bought out by the main
Julia Louise Dreyfus.
Well, they think it's going to be Willem Dafoe rocking up as that Marvel's universe Norman Osborn, because,
but that doesn't even make sense. I know it doesn't make Oscorp sense. Like, if you in Spider-Man No Way Home, they say that.
But then also, like, J. Jonah Jameson is J.K. Simmons, so it's like this different version of him. Even though it's the same actor.
They do, because Norman Osborn runs them for a while.
Yeah,
but I think that's what they're most famous for, from what I remember, reading Spider-Man comics.
Yeah, and I don't know. There's aspects that I'm very excited for, just visually, and I think it's also cool to bring.
The guy who did Beef? I really like that show.
That's Jake Schreier.
Yeah, so I wonder how much of his kind of touch will survive this movie.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that at least it doesn't feel like it's been overly edited by sort of like the Marvel House style. Like some of the more boring entries, even when they're made by directors that I know can be good or have made good movies in the past, their Marvel movies still kind of feel like they've fit into a house style for Marvel. And Thunderbolts doesn't entirely look like that. But I think the other problem is it's going to be very hard to distinguish for some people that this is a movie and not just a Disney Plus thing. Because the Disney Plus stuff,
well, that's part of the problem, is that they've diluted the whole thing with these fucking mediocre miniseries and stuff like that. That it's like it's withered away excitement for the movies. It's sapped away the energy.
They're going to be doing a lot of backpedaling, I think, and trying to get more and more people in to say, no, this is really important. Don't worry about the other stuff. That stuff's its own thing. This is actually important.
It just feels like another push to make the C players like the main players.
Mm.
That's what I'm not saying like it looks like shit or I won't watch it or anything, but I'm not excited and I don't see what the hook of the movie is.
I can get that.
Yeah.
I'm very excited though for Last of Us Season 2. Loved the first season. I haven't played the second game, so
I'm playing the second game right now. Okay. 4 years too late. I'm probably like halfway through it.
Yeah.
I'm really enjoying it, you know, gameplay wise and stuff.
Cool.
It's stunning. And the trailer, you know, looks very faithful to the game.
Yes. But in a way that I think the first season's trailer also had that vibe where people were thinking, oh, okay, this kind of looks like the game in some aspects, like casting and certain sequences. But then as that show played out, as that season played out, people realized how different it was, but not in a, in a different sense that, oh, they're ruining it. No, they're actually kind of enhancing it. And I think by doing a TV show, it allowed them to like explore emotional aspects that the game couldn't, because the game is so focused on these characters. You couldn't have an episode like season one, episode three, which is just about...
That was the main point of difference with Bill and Frank.
Yeah. The ability to do that, I think, changed a lot of people's sort of perspective. I think the first two episodes, people were like, oh, okay, this is a really cool adaptation. And then suddenly, whoa, where did that come from? That's very different. And that feels to me like what TV shows should do, is that you have this ability to tell more expansive stories, and but also very particular ones as well.
Well, and it's not like a real deviation either, because I guess in the game that Bill and Frank, which is largely in the background kind of story, that's actually kind of like a warning for Joel.
Yeah. And you still have that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a warning of what like could happen if he didn't, you know, find some purpose in protecting Ellie.
Mm-hmm.
And in the TV show, it actually kind of affirms his desire to protect Ellie.
Yeah, exactly.
So it has the same kind of function. They just went about it in different ways. Like, obviously, the Bill and Frank story in the game wouldn't work.
Mm.
But in the TV show, yeah, it worked beautifully.
Yeah.
So I assume with part two, you know, there's like controversial story choices, obviously. Yes,
because you follow an entirely different character.
Yeah, for half of the game.
Yeah.
And
which I think can work better in a show, because if you have, you know, an episode that's this storyline and this storyline, people are more used to that. People are more used to seeing multiple storylines in an episode.
And in part two especially, they introduce like a couple of different factions. Like the main setting is in Seattle.
Yep.
And there's a whole, like, you know, different couple of factions there that you follow.
Yeah.
In, you know, when you're the other character, Abby.
Yeah.
Who's played by Caitlin Denver in this season.
Diva. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Isabella Merced is in the season. Jeffrey Wright is in the season. Catherine O'Hara.
Jeffrey Wright is playing the same character he does in the game, actually.
Oh, really? I didn't know.
Yeah. Just from that one scene, I was like, oh, he's playing the exact same character.
That's sick.
Yeah.
That really is awesome. Yeah. I think that's great, because they also gave sort of not background roles, but like separate roles to Troy Baker and
They were like
Ashley Benson.
She was Ellie's mother, and yes, he was one of the hunters at the
which is cool. I think doing that is good, because it still says to those cast members, like, while we couldn't give you the lead roles, we still love you. We still want you to be a part of this. We still want you to be on set so we can, you know, hang out and everything. So I think that's cool.
And obviously with this season, like, Ellie's role is expanded for sure.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, you know, she's going to really, Bella Ramsey has to like lead, co-lead the show with Caitlin Dever.
In a sense, yes. No real spoilers there for what happens. But yeah, it's I think it's cool, because Bella Ramsey is a great actress. And I think this season in general, I think will prove a lot of people who are still kind of saying, oh, isn't she too young? It's like, well, one, she's like 25. She just looks young. Her face is a bit, I don't know. She's just got a very, very young face. And it makes her look a lot younger than what she actually
is. Well, that's the thing. Like with the game, the first game, Ellie, and in part two, she clearly has like, she grows up and looks different.
Yeah, you can do that in a game, because you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, but yeah. And in season two, obviously, she looks the same as she did in season one. But like,
longer hair.
You change her outfit, like her hair. And
she's
like,
got a tattoo
you
on
tell her
arm.
To act a certain way, she'll cover the difference.
Exactly. That's what I like about her, is that I have all the faith that she'll do a good job, because she's a very good actress.
But one of the things, especially because I actually watched the show before I even played the games.
All right.
Is obviously the chemistry with her and Pedro Pascal. Mm. And you just hope that they've cast it. Obviously, they've got good actors, but you hope like the chemistry is there too.
Mm. I mean, as we said, the cast alone, I think, is where I have a lot of faith. And also, you still got the same people involved for season one. Whatever they tell for season two, I'm on board.
Yeah,
regardless of how different or similar it might be to the games, I think I'm more caring about it as just now a TV show.
It's less episodes. It's 7 episodes.
Okay, right.
And I think they're splitting part two up into like 3 seasons.
Yeah. They want to do that as like sort of a longer thing, which I think is good, because then if they know that there's enough story there,
yeah,
tell as much as you want. That's fine. Don't feel hampered.
I do wonder if they're going to get to a point where it's like Game of Thrones, where like they've run out of source material.
They're overlapping.
But they'll keep up.
Yeah.
And the show will, story will diverge if there's a third game.
I think so. But I think, again, the good thing is, unlike Game of Thrones, where they slowly started to push George R. R. Martin out of the creative process, Neil Druckmann is still like...
Oh, he's integral.
He's very much there. Yeah. He's right there. He's a co-showrunner.
I mean, unless there's like some falling out, which could happen, with him and Craig Mazin.
We'll see what happens, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that still gives me the faith. Did you watch the trailer for Ballerina, which is the John Wick spin-off?
No, I haven't. I saw it was put up, but yeah. I just have a bad feeling about this movie.
It feels like it's too late. This movie should have come out like 3 years ago. It should have come out 2021, because it's set between 3 and 4, and it follows Ana de Armas as she's like involved with the ballerina school that John Wick
had
been grown up in. And Keanu Reeves is in this movie. He's like at the end of the trailer, he kind of pops up.
I think does it run alongside chapter 4, or is it between chapter 3 and 4?
Because isn't there like a year between 3 and 4? I think.
Is there? Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Lance Reddick is in it.
Okay. So he obviously filmed this. His last role.
I think they filmed this like 2022. So it's been
I'd heard time. That they had practically reshot the whole movie.
I wouldn't be surprised.
With Chad Stahelski pretty much overseeing the reshoots.
Len Wiseman is still credited as the director.
Yeah, but it's not really his movie.
Yeah, he did all the Underworld films. So that, not all of them, but like a fair few of them.
I mean, he's a mediocre. That's what I mean. Like, he's a mediocre director.
I think his last movie was the Total Recall remake.
Yeah.
Which my brother...
That sucked. I saw that. That was terrible.
Yeah, my brother liked that one. I don't think he's watched it since.
No.
We bought it, watched it, went, okay, cool. Just watched the original. Absolutely. Yeah. The one that I'm very excited for, though, trailer-wise, was Ryan Coogler's next film.
Sinners. That looks interesting.
Oh,
I wonder what the deal is.
I'm very curious.
Intrigue to that trailer.
It's got a little bit of that sort of Jordan Peele vibe in that it's a horror. It's an original horror story. Shows you a trailer that gives away absolutely nothing, and it just goes pure vibes of like, something's going on, something's messed up, you have to find out. It's like, awesome. I love that. I'm so excited.
It looks fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's shot with IMAX. It says it's shot with IMAX cameras, but it's also a very sort of very wide aspect ratio. Shot on film, obviously. And it just, as soon as the trailer started, I went, oh yeah, I'm in. I'm a big cinematography fan. So if a movie looks good, you've already got me, like visually.
Yeah.
If it starts to have those trace elements of, I don't know, too much CGI or sort of like flat color grading, that's when you start to push me out. But from the minute that this trailer started, I was in. I'm absolutely there.
I love the collaboration on Fruitvale Station.
Oh, yeah. It's his first original screenplay since that movie, which...
That's weird, because they've just done franchises like Rocky and Black Panther. Yeah.
But that's the thing, like,
and
they made the best Rocky movie in Creed, and they made one of the best Marvel movies with Black Panther films. So it's like, I've got all the faith in the world in you guys. Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm very excited for that.
Yes, that comes out March next year.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Do you want to talk about Martin Scorsese? Maybe.
What about him?
Not making his next two movies. You know, he's a very...
Why wouldn't he make them?
I don't know. There's no...
Did someone say it's delayed?
Yes. Yeah. So, Martin Scorsese was planning to do two films almost like back-to-back, which that man is like 82, I think. He's definitely in his 80s now.
Yeah.
He was hoping to make a Frank Sinatra biopic and another movie.
Wait, do you think it's because... what was that movie he did? The Killing of a Sacred... No,
Killers of the Flower Moon. Yeah.
Was that because that bombed really hard and they're like, oh...
No, because his second movie he was going to do, which was announced first, The Life of Jesus, he was apparently going to fully fund that himself.
Oh, okay.
Kind of like what Francis Ford Coppola did with Megalopolis, which we will be talking about very soon.
Yeah.
He was going to put up all the money himself... Which, sure, I don't think that movie would have been massively expensive in any way.
So is he going to distribute it?
I think he would have partnered with a studio, like something else, to help with that.
It's harder for him to get movies made now. He struggled to get financing for Silence.
Well, that's the same thing, is that I think he knew that no one would be really interested in putting all the money behind Silence, which also didn't do very well box office wise.
No.
But he doesn't really care because it's just about expressing that creative ability. And the thing for me is that I know that Scorsese can still do it. His last, what, like five films have all been absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Like some of the best movies that we've gotten this entire century. Like he just,
yeah,
he hasn't really slipped up. I'm not a big fan of Hugo, but that's kind of the only one that I could say eh on. But a lot of other people still love that anyway. Like you look at Wolf of Wall Street, Silence, The Irishman, Killers of the Flower Moon. Like this is, he's on a streak, absolutely. So yeah. He was, as I said, going to make these movies. Now they've apparently been postponed indefinitely. Nobody really knows why. Maybe funding fell out. Maybe he looked at some things that are happening with Megalopolis and is getting a little disinterested.
He might be sick.
Yeah, I mean, he's old. He's like, definitely at that point.
Yeah, he might just feel like, I actually don't have the energy to do this.
Yeah, well, Spielberg's still making a new movie next year, which is apparently like a big sort of science fiction event type movie.
Really cool.
Very, very excited for that.
Yeah.
No, I have no idea what it is, but I'm in. Yeah. So I'm very interested to see what happens with it. I love Scorsese. He's absolutely one of my all-time favorite filmmakers.
Of course.
And Killers of Flower Moon was probably one of his all-time best films somehow. Like he's able to, yeah, he's able to still do that into his old age. He's able to realize like everything that's come before him and make this sort of statement on, you know, aging, but also of like, you know, the burden of the past in a lot of ways.
Yeah. But his films are just still very entertaining.
Yes.
Like, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
In a sense, they're also extremely long.
They are, yeah.
But they're experiences more than anything. You watch Silence, you're not in for something, you know, dark and horrifying and you know, mile a minute. It is sit with this and just let it play. That's all you have to do. And I love that.
Well, they reward full engagement.
Yeah, but apparently Life of Jesus was not supposed to be like that. It was supposed to be like 90 minutes.
Really?
Sort of like half documentary almost.
Interesting.
Which sounds really cool. Like, yeah. I love that idea.
That's not what I would have expected.
No, I think he said that. He said, I didn't want to make another epic film. I wanted to just go completely the opposite. Make it 90 minutes, make it really short and sweet, but also make it really kind of pop in that way.
Yeah.
So if he does get around to doing that, I really hope he does. If not, Killers of the Flower Moon as a last film.
Day one, I'll get a ticket for whatever
he does. Absolutely. But yeah. An amazing filmmaker who is still making great movies. Anyway, on to another amazing filmmaker who has made a movie.
Oh, we're going to talk about Megalopolis.
Yes. So this segment, which is the review segment, we're going to call The Thing.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Because it's the thing of the week, I guess. Megalopolis. Mm. Oh, boy. What a fucking movie this is.
Yeah.
So, you know, we call this Movies Are Back. Francis Ford Coppola is back.
Yeah.
He hasn't made a movie since 2012, which was like a bunch of weird independent stuff. Reese, do you want to tell me what this movie is?
You know, if I could kind of sum it up, it's like a $100 million radioactive turkey featuring like pretty much career-killing performances.
Oh, absolutely.
And I do want to say, I will say up front, I could only stomach about 40 to 50 minutes of it.
Yeah.
And I'd seen enough.
I don't know if you wanted to save that for a spoiler section or not. But
no, yeah. I mean, you know, if it was just me and you in the theater watching it, I think I could have done it.
Oh, absolutely.
But there were like other people there.
Yeah.
And I just was feeling just like depressed.
I would have loved it if it became like a Mystery Science Theater thing where we start like calling stuff out the film or laughing out loud. But I felt weird doing that.
It was weird. Like we all just had to sit there and like be subjected to this fucking like monstrosity. And I couldn't take it.
Yeah.
So
this is, Francis Ford Coppola has been trying to make this for like 40 years.
And I do wonder like if he had successfully made it in the 90s or early 2000s, how different it would be.
I think honestly, it would have been better if he made it in 1983. It would have made absolutely no money. Like he made a movie called One from the Heart, which like this, he poured all of his money into, all the money he had made from the Godfather movies and anything else that he had done. and it was a huge financial bomb. No one liked it, and he was pretty much laughed out of Hollywood in a sense, and he went off and did a bunch of like independent stuff for most of the 80s and into the 90s as well. And he was trying to like, he had to just do a bunch of studio gigs to earn back the money that he had lost on One from the Heart, which is
But he'd been wanting to insane. Make this one, Megalopolis, for decades.
Yeah.
And I can't believe like this is the result
of
decades and like selling his whole business.
And that's what was interesting. I started looking this movie up. He had tried to make it in 83 and then came up with like a 400-page notebook or something like that with all these ideas that he had poured into it, and it's influenced by like a dozen books or something like that. And every time he's tried to make a new movie, he's always said, no, I don't want to do that. I want to work on Megalopolis. But then he thinks, Megalopolis is getting too weird. Yes, I'll go work on Godfather Part 3 and Bram Stoker's Dracula and The Rainmaker and all this other stuff. And then the reason why he did Youth Without Youth in 2007, which was his first movie in like 10 years at that point, was because someone had given him that book to influence him for Megalopolis. But then he said, no, I want to do this book instead as the opposite of a movie that I haven't made yet. He kept referencing it as if it's already a thing like existing, but it's always just been this amorphous idea. And then only, I think like a couple of years ago, did he say, yep, it's done. And I'm going to be selling my winery for $500 million and spending $120 million of my own money into the budget, fully financed. And I'm going to get a bunch of, you know, incredible actors like A-listers in here to realize it now.
Yeah.
I would like to go into like a plot synopsis, but I can't because I don't know what the plot was.
Well, I guess you could say what the premise is and where it goes wrong from there.
Do you want to explain that? I mean,
this film presents, you know, an alternative kind of vision of the United States.
Yes.
Specifically New York, which I think is called New Rome.
Yeah.
In the movie.
There's no explanation why that is. I guess it's just more
of a... Well, because Chrissy, this movie is called Megalopolis, A Fable.
Ah.
So it's like I suppose it's meant to be sort of an analogy or a fairy tale kind of thing.
Yeah, like the lion and the mouse.
Yeah, yeah.
The lion and the mouse, the tortoise and the hare, and Megalopolis.
And I suppose a recent disaster had just rocked this city. And,
yes.
You know, and so we're introduced to this sort of genius architect, Adam Driver. His name is Caesar, you know, he wants to sort of rebuild New Rome after this disaster in the kind of a utopian image,
yes,
you know, and, you know, but there's the mayor of New Rome, played by Giancarlo Esposito. Cicero, I think that character's name is.
What he's supposed to be.
And he just wants to keep sort of the status quo as it is.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I guess that's sort of the main conflict that's set up, right?
Between
Adam Driver and the mayor of this town.
Yeah.
And in between, you've got seemingly endless scenes of, I guess, Coppola satirizing modern society, I suppose.
A modern society that feels really dated. Sometimes
it's like,
it's sometimes like the Trump America, you know, what have we become? You know, we're letting dictators
it's
run things or something.
Lots of scenes of like decadence from the wealthy.
Yeah.
Which I guess this architect hero also partakes in, which I suppose is supposed to be the interesting contradiction of his character.
Yeah.
But when you're watching it, it just feels random and unengaging.
Yeah.
I think that's the problem with this movie, like from the first frame, from the first scene, it's not interested in you thinking about it. It's just you're forced to sort of take, you know, his message. It's rammed down your throat.
Yeah,
he's just saying to think about.
This is it.
This is it.
Deal with it.
And there's like scenes of like Morpheus, Lawrence Fishburne, you know, just stating the themes of the movie.
It's no subtext.
There's no subtext at all. And it's so simultaneously like pompous and like absurd.
It's it's the Garth Marenghi meme where he says,
I know writers who use subtext and they're all cowards.
Yeah. That's just Francis Ford Coppola.
If you had watched this and you didn't know who directed it, you would assume it's a student film.
But I think it would have been like a first time filmmaker using like his rich dad's credit card.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen movies like that.
Yeah. everything about it is so like slapdash and it's corny.
It's also fucking terrible. It's
so unbearable.
I don't remember the last time that I have sat through a movie where every single scene I just thought, why did that person do that? Why did Dustin Hoffman say that line? Why did you just cut to this random shot of Jason Schwartzman, your nephew or whatever, Francis, banging on a drum kit in the middle of a slow dancing scene? What is happening? I don't understand. And I've looked into the massive Wikipedia article for this film. We could do spoilers at a certain point, but there's nothing. The plot just keeps happening. It's not storytelling. It's just story yelling. They're just saying, this is what's going on. And now this is what's going on.
Where Nathalie Emmanuel enters the architect's office. Played by Adam Driver, like we said.
Did you mention Nathalie Emmanuel?
Yeah, she's playing the mayor's daughter. Who gives a fuck? Anyway, she's interested in Adam Driver. So anyway, she walks into the scene to meet Adam Driver in his office. And she's sort of standing up and he's sitting down.
Yep.
And like at that point, I actually did have to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
So I went to pee, you know. I went to just look at my phone.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
took your time.
It felt like 20 minutes had passed.
Yep.
I came back.
Still talking.
They're not just still talking. He's still sitting down and she's still just standing there.
And then he delivers this. That scene was released as an exclusive clip recently. It's like, hey, look.
What? That's the scene they want to show off the movie?
Because I think because Lionsgate are distributing this movie. Lionsgate, who this year they have had films like The Crow and Borderlands, they will 100% be bankrupt by next year. They have had the worst year movie-wise. Look their studio up. Horrible. They only have Hunger Games to look forward to at this
point. And even that last one didn't do that well.
No. It didn't do better than the other ones, but it actually did better than a lot of movies that were coming out at the same time.
Yeah.
So I think that's where they were like, cool, awesome.
But
I think know that this movie is going to become a bit of a meme in some ways because they released that clip which features the incredible line delivery of Adam Driver saying, go back to the club.
Dude.
Entitles me?
Yes.
Entitles me?
Yes.
Entitles me?
Yes. So go back to the club.
That has actually been living in my head since I saw it.
That
line was so awful and like so strangely delivered. It actually has stuck in my head.
Yeah.
Like it's very sticky, that bit. I got to watch that scene again.
It's online now, so they've fully released that. But it's that and John Voight rant. The bit that I think broke me completely where I thought, nah, I'm totally checking out now because I don't think anything's going to be funnier than that. John Voight is in this movie with Aubrey Plaza, who I think is actually genuinely good because she knows exactly what she's in. She knows that it's...
Yeah, she's giving like, campy, fun performance.
Which she kind of does a lot of the time, even in terrible movies that she's in. But she's always appropriate
because like the character name is like Wow Platinum and she's a satirical kind of... It's thin, but it sort of works.
Yeah. So she reveals a statue to John Voight's character.
Yeah. It's a statue of him, isn't it?
And John Voight, who has no idea where he is at all in this whole movie. They just paid him whatever money they paid him and said, say this. He went, okay. He looks incredibly old.
Yeah.
And he says, oh, wow, look at that. Just at that sort of total, oh, cool, yeah, that looks great. And that is the epitome of this movie, is just, oh, wow, look at that. That's certainly something. It's a kid who made this shitty clay pot and just said, I made it for you. Happy Mother's Day or whatever. And you go, wow, you sure put in...
It's like that kind of... Wow. Yeah.
But it's an 83-year-old man who has made some of the greatest movies in the history of cinema saying, look at this.
It's somehow just really, really gaudy and completely indifferent as well.
It's a $120 million movie, but it also looks cheap as shit.
Yeah, it does. It looks just really like it had like a poor production.
Yeah, which it kind of did. I looked up some details that they were making up scenes on the day. Yeah. And this kind of frustrated a lot of the crew members. We'd heard about this. A lot of reports started to come out about this movie before it was being released. Like, crew members were saying that Coppola was being weird with a lot of the extras. There's a lot of like allegations.
There's some video footage too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. There's actual footage of this. So there's evidence of him being just a little odd. I don't know if there's some actresses who say, oh, don't worry, you know, I knew what was going on, so it's all fine. But it's still like, yeah, but it still doesn't excuse it being weird. Even if you say yes to it, it's still weird behavior. And I don't think I can condone that. And he fired the visual effects team because he would just come up with random things and then they'd say, you know, you can't do that, right? He says, well, now I can because you're fired and I'm going to get my son, Roman, to help do the visual effects, which he already did. This a lot of what was put into this movie, he's already done before, you know, massive budget that's going out of control with incredible actors that
yeah, he's
don't
always
know what they're
doing. Like flirted with disaster, yeah. even in his greatest movies.
Apocalypse Now was almost like he could have easily died making that movie, and there's a whole documentary about that, which apparently there is a documentary coming out about this movie.
It's called
Mega Doc. It's being directed by Mike Figgis. I don't know when it comes out. I need to see it.
I'm excited to watch that. I'm telling you, just to watch this and to be a fly on the wall of when they were making this fucking dud.
Incredible.
Yeah. It's going to be a must watch.
Yeah. As I said, they were making up scenes as they went along. They were coming up with visual effects on the fly, which is something he already did for Bram Stoker's Dracula. Like he and his son, Roman, he fired his visual effects team for that movie in 92 and then hired his son, Roman, to do the visual effects like in camera. But that works because that movie was trying to evoke like the beginning of cinema. Because he thought, well, the book was originally written in 1905. So we're going to try and make this movie like they would in 1905, like at the birth of cinema. So that's why there's all these like weird visual transitions and that sort of like that iris effect with the black bars. Like it creates that little circle over the frame. You know, it's a very old cinema thing. He does all of that in this movie, but there's no reason for it. It's just, whatever. There's no backing of, oh, we're trying to make it like it's the birth of cinema or whatever. The only backing, the only sort of influence of this movie mainly is Roman epics. So make it like a Roman epic. Like make it, you know, gaudy and insane and have like, I've seen craziest stuff in Babylon. Like that's sort of the party sequence. I want that to be this movie.
That's what he was going for, but it was so just lazily directed.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel, you know, as indulgent and out of control and insane as it should.
Yeah.
But it's like going for it, but it's not, it's failing miserably to reach it.
Do you think we can really do spoilers? Like, could we say...
Just say whatever. Who gives a fuck?
Spoilers, there you go. We walked out. We just refused because I kept thinking, I could easily go home now, go to bed, and I won't feel like I've missed out on anything. No, I don't think there's like anything that could happen going on like later on that's going to change my mind and make me think, oh, actually, maybe this is good. So I did do a little bit of, you know, Yara pirating or whatever and watch the rest of this movie. Nothing happens. It keeps talking about the people are going to take over and they're going to take power back. But then Adam Driver, billionaire creator man who's so brilliant and just is brilliant for the sake of being brilliant, he says, hey, we're opening up a dialogue about this. It's nice that we have a conversation. And now everything is better. And it's like, that's not how you solve America's problems. Coppola is trying to say, everything's going crazy, but you know what we need? We need a big rich guy to just say, hey, let's have a dialogue. No, you need actual action. Like he's playing around with, they keep saying, you know, we should just burn it all down. It's sort of like nihilistic, like anarchy. They should just burn it all down. Like V for Vendetta. That's what it should be. It should get to the end of the movie and the entire city is firebombed or whatever. And it's just a massive explosion just rocks through the city and turns out, oh, actually that ends up leveling the playing field. Like just total anarchy. I know maybe he couldn't do that because, you know, 9/11 or whatever. But that's what it should build to. It should build to something where you think, oh, okay, maybe the answer is to just reset everything. But no, their answer is, don't worry, rich people will save the day. Like me, Francis Ford Coppola, who's rich,
Adam
and
Driver,
I can do whatever I want.
Adam Driver is the idealized Francis Ford Coppola.
Yeah.
And Giancarlo Esposito, the the mayor who wants to hold on to the status quo is like a imagined critics or studio execs or anyone who would interfere with
you're his crazy you don't know what's going vision. On yeah
it's so like nakedly obvious and vain that you just feel real embarrassment.
I think that's the main thing, is that I said to you, and this is the main thing I kept thinking about, and we mentioned Martin Scorsese and what he's been able to do this sort of late stage of his career, where he may not always get his films fully funded, but he's still putting himself into, you know, Spielberg. His last two movies have not been box office successes, but he still pours himself into. The results of those movies are brilliant. I would argue that on Spielberg's side, like West Side Story and The Fablemans, are two of his absolute best films. And that says quite a bit, because this is Spielberg we're talking about. Same thing for Scorsese. Like, I think Wolf of Wall Street and Silence and The Irishman and Killers of the Flower Moon.
But the difference is they've been, like, consistently working at their craft.
Yeah, they've been still and making movies. He has
been checked out of making movies, really, for fucking decades.
I would say he's pretty much been completely checked out since Bram Stoker's Dracula. Because the next movie he made after that was Jack. You ever seen Jack?
No, I'd heard about it.
Yeah.
So, that's what I'm saying. Like, this doesn't feel like it's made for the love of cinema. It feels like it's made to satisfy his ego.
Absolutely.
And he's completely lost touch with, you know, human beings.
That's what it is.
And this movie is meant to be like a kind of a humanist. Like, it's like a Wachowski movie. Like, you know, it's like a very terrible Wachowski movie.
The best comparison that I can make, and this might really kind of throw some of our listeners out that I hope are listening still. Someone pointed out that it feels like big budget Neil Breen.
I've heard that. I've never seen a Neil Breen movie.
I've tried to watch Neil Breen. If you ever don't watch Neil Breen movies because they're horrifying on your own, watch them with friends with a lot of drinks. Like, watch like Fateful Findings. That guy, again, fully funds his own movies, gets his mates or whatever. He's a totally incompetent filmmaker, barely knows what a camera is. But man, is it funny to just see him throw everything out there and make total pieces of shit. But that's still funny. Like, that becomes that sort of trash classic, you know, you can put it on with friends and laugh at it because you know what it is trying to do, which is satisfy this man's ego. And it's not, that's not embarrassing. It's more of, oh, look, he actually did make a movie, so you could kind of, you know, enjoy him on that sense. You can enjoy The Room on that sense that, hey, they made it. It's absolutely awful. It's really funny to laugh at. And almost at a certain point, that filmmaker knows that it's becoming a sort of cult classic type thing, and they kind of lean into it. Like, Tommy Wiseau absolutely now leans into it being the, you know, the Citizen Kane of bad movies or whatever.
Well, yeah, but he wanted this like to be a classic people would watch every year. Like, It's a Wonderful Life.
He keeps pointing out that this is going to be like Apocalypse Now.
I don't think it's meant to be seen as like a camp.
I don't think it's supposed to be seen, period.
I don't think it should be seen. But the way that people are liking this movie, like the very few people that do like
New York Times was saying, you know, this is something you should see because it's total unbridled creativity. I'm like,
it's not. It's so boring.
It's not. No, it feels like at some times that this was made by AI, because every single scene is completely random, as if the script randomly generated a bunch of, you know, pages from other scripts and just threw them all together. All the visuals just look so weird and bright and cheap.
It reminds me of like, yeah, fuzzy, like a latter stage Wachowski sisters movie.
Some
like
people
visually pointed, like some of the city bits looked like Matrix Resurrections.
Yeah, some people like, were comparing it to like Jupiter Ascending, where stuff happens.
Like just a really gaudy, like screensaver look.
Yeah,
like a real. There was actually one
it
scene.
It's like a Windows screensaver.
Yeah, the way this scene begins and ends is so confusing that when Adam Driver is showing Natalie Emmanuel something on a tower, and they're having this nonsensical conversation, they're just talking about nothing.
I don't even remember. It's just time is the curse of the before some and
bullshit,
past.
I'm some like, bullshit like that. What? But anyway, he's taken her to this tower, and I'm not joking. I couldn't tell you whether they were in like what was meant to be a virtual world or whether they were actually in the city.
Yeah.
It looked so fake.
Yeah.
And, you know,
they filmed it on a volume. I did look that up.
It looked worse than the volume. It looked like just the worst green screen you've ever seen in your life. With the most like stock wind sound effects. Yeah. Like, I've heard this stock sound effect a million times.
The sound is awful. The sound
is... There's no richness or depth. It feels like this movie's populated by like three or four people.
Yeah.
At any kind of given time.
I found out a detail about why the sound sounds that way.
Yeah.
Apparently Coppola didn't want to have disruptive noise or anything like that. So what he would do is he'd pre-record dialogue and then play it through loudspeakers on set during the filming of the scene.
Wow. Okay.
That's why it sounds...
It sounds weird.
Shit.
Yeah.
I said this to my housemate that sound in a movie is supposed to be imperceptible. It's supposed to be the most like simple thing. It's like editing, you know, scene to scene transitions. You're not supposed to notice it. And that actually means that it's good. If you don't sit there and go, oh, that was a weird cut. If you're just following along the film from scene to scene without feeling like it's being assembled before your very eyes, then that's actually like
there's a supposed good work. To be this thing with engaging kind of big movies like this where a world is suggested that you're unconsciously creating way beyond the borders of the cinema,
yeah.
of the screen.
Yeah.
So that's why it feels immersive.
Mm.
Like the first Star Wars movie, you know, from 1977, you watch that. Obviously, it's if you look at it objectively, it's a small, inexpensively made movie.
In a sense, yeah.
But it feels massive when you're watching it. Like it feels like there's a world outside of yeah. what you're watching. And this... It feels like barely anything is actually happening in the frame.
It feels so small for a again. I keep.
And it's not. It's not a cheap movie.
No.
And
like $120 million.
Ambitious special effects and all these. This costume design and like this production design.
He fired the production designer behind this film, and then at that point started just working with a concept artist. And there's a kind of a sequence towards the end. I looked this up after we had walked out.
Yeah.
Where it's just. Concept visuals, and I kept thinking this would work so much better if either you had made it in the 80s and used like animation, like yeah. 80s animation to realize some of that stuff. I think that could have worked.
Yeah,
I kind of like you know, some more ambitious version of who's the guy that made Ralph Bakshi.
Oh,
like that yeah. sort of stuff. I think that could have maybe.
You know what? Speaking of Ralph Bakshi, yeah. do you know how like in that movie Gandalf is like he's very weird with his movements and his hands?
Yes, the sort of rotoscope.
That was like Adam Driver's performance.
He does. He looks like he's been rotoscoped.
He looks the way he's moving his hands and in the scenes. It's so uncanny and like nonsensical.
Yeah.
That you're just like, what the fuck
he
is?
He just
going
comes
on?
Up and just waves his hand randomly and then. Shakes his cape.
It's supposed to be kind of like imply this kind of mystique, but when you're yes. watching it, it's unsettling and annoying.
Well,
at the same time,
I found out one of the reasons why there's a lot of moments where someone does something so random that you think, why did yeah. they do that? That is what they did for rehearsals. They would do like these weird actors rehearsals, and you know, I've been an amateur actor before. You do right. weird stuff, you know,
because you're trying to like find something.
Yeah, you stand in a circle and you start projecting your voice randomly, or you imagine that you're pulling on an invisible rope. That's what Adam Driver and
they're literally doing that.
That is an actor's rehearsal that they just went, oh yeah, just use that take, even though it makes no sense whatsoever. It doesn't connect to anything.
It's an actor exercise, I imagine, to let your inhibitions loose.
Yeah,
you know, and like open up your creative. Instincts or inner eye or whatever.
The visual segments where there's like no dialogue or like there's maybe too much dialogue
like lapping and shit.
Yeah, you can't understand what's going on. You could take those sequences, put it as like a video montage in an art museum, and it'd be fine because that makes no sense. So you can put your own impression
on what
it is.
You can project onto it, yeah.
But that doesn't work in a film. You can't use that in a film. You can do that in an experimental movie, like Coppola,
or an abstract surreal kind of movie.
Coppola presented or was involved in the distribution of one of my absolute favorite films, which is Koya Niskatsi,
mm-hmm.
which is directed by Godfrey Reggio and shot by Ron Frick.
Okay.
That movie is just basically what you would assume is stock footage. It's just shots of like landscapes and buildings and people moving about a shopping center or whatever. And that's fine, because that's an experimental movie. You know from the minute you're watching that film, there's no dialogue, no characters, there's no real story that's being told. It's just music and visuals. Fine. I think that is still fine. If he had done it like that, if it was like a 90-minute, you know, weird, you know, still have the actors or whatever, but do it like Terrence Malick, where he gets his actors and then just gets them to just kind of wander about.
No, but yeah, so like with those movies, you're meant to kind of like bring yourself to those movies, and then you get what you're putting into it.
Yeah.
Like, but this movie, you're not meant to be thinking about anything except what he's telling you to think.
Yeah. So he's not allowing you to make up your own mind.
You can't engage with it. It refuses your engagement.
So sure, it's a very unique film in how it just doesn't help you at all.
It doesn't want you to engage with it. You're meant to sit there kind of helpless.
Deal with it.
And just hear his fucking bullshit shallow manifesto on society.
I think...
What does he know about, like, that shit anyway?
It feels like it was ripped apart by a studio, but it wasn't.
This movie is a case for, like, why you need studio interference. Absolutely. Sometimes.
Christopher McQuarrie, who directed, you know, the last couple of Mission Impossible films, he talks about this a bunch where he says that like, studio notes, or at least, like, test screenings, are so crucial for how he makes his movies, because he then understands what people are really going to respond to, and he wants to get the audience involved, and not specifically to make it for other people. Like, he's still making the movie he wants to make, but he also wants to understand how people are going to respond. He wants people to enjoy what he's putting out on screen.
He wants the two-way street between viewer and filmmaker.
Exactly.
And Ford Coppola actively doesn't think about that.
Apparently, George Lucas, who's like Francis's best friend or whatever, after he sold Disney for $4 billion, it was reported that he gave like half of it to charity, which, fair enough, good on you. But he also said that he is just going to now go back to his ranch.
And make experimental movies.
Exactly. That, quote, no one will watch. That he'll show to no one except for, like,
family
and friends.
Because he's smart enough to know no one would want to watch
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Like, this movie is like that. Like, he made it for himself. He should just... It was never going to make any money. No one was ever going to respond to it.
No.
Just make it... Keep it as your thing.
Yeah, on a budget of $120 million.
And show, like, your friends.
It's expected to make $4 million this weekend in the US.
It'll be lucky to make that. It's so bad.
No, I think it's... I think it will barely scrape by.
I think it'll... Initially, there'll be people like us who are, like, into, you know, film.
Yeah, that's what they said. It's the main audience is cinephiles.
Yeah, it that's it.
Yeah.
And because there are so few, like, big budget original science fiction movies, you'd think, oh, you know, of course, like, I'll check it out. It's a waste of time to, like, it's not even absolutely. A so bad it's good movie. It's not, like, we're making it sound probably even more interesting than it is. Like, I assure you, it's a torturous experience. I was there for 15, like, I remember just looking at my watch and I was like, I can't believe we're just 20 minutes into the movie.
Oh, this is kind of, you know, jumping the gun a little bit until the third section where we talk about what we've watched and, you know, what we're continuing to watch. I've seen Lawrence of Arabia recently in the cinema. There was a matinee screening. That movie is 3 hours and 42 minutes. This felt longer. Megalopolis feels longer than the longest film to ever win Best Picture. One of the longest movies that has ever, like, been released by a major studio in Hollywood. I would rather watch Lawrence of Arabia 3 times. Gone with the Wind is coming out soon at the Revival House in Como on film. I would rather watch that.
Yeah.
That movie is not good, and it goes for like 3.5 hours, but I'd rather do that than watch Megalopolis again, because there's nothing here for me to get behind. As I said, I'm a cinematography fan. So at the very least, if a movie is not good, I could probably put it on mute and just admire the pretty scenery. And there's some shots, like there's like visual effects type shots that are very interesting on an ambitious level. There's like a shot of the moon and then a hand that's made of clouds comes out and grabs the moon. Like, okay, that's cool. That's and this stuff is all in the trailers. Just watch the trailer and you'll get all the best shots of the movie.
Yeah.
Because every other scene when they just sit in a room and talk to each other, it's so flat and boring. I've seen porn films.
I've never seen so little chemistry generated between actors.
Oh, absolutely.
Than in this one. It's horrendous. Like, every bad instinct is, like, unchecked.
Yeah.
In this movie. And it's just, the result is this. And I wouldn't rate it because it's like, I didn't finish it. So I'm not going to give it a rating. I'll just say...
Yeah.
It says enough that I couldn't handle it after 15 minutes and I walked out, and I never want to subject myself to it again.
I'll give it 2 thumbs down, like the old Siskel and Ebert, where they just didn't like something, just 2 thumbs down. Simply that.
I'll just say I walked out. It was...
There you go. I walked out.
That's enough. Like, I don't walk out of movies.
Put on the DVD, put cover everybody.
Yeah.
I walked out.
This was a legendarily bad movie.
Yeah. I don't think I'll see anything worse than this for the rest of the year.
Doubt it.
I highly doubt it. Anyway. Oh, boy. Do you want to move on?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I want to feel better about my day now. So, last segment of the show, we're going to go channel surfing.
Let's go surfing now. Yeah, this is just a little bullshit place where we can just talk about what we're watching recently or playing.
What have you been watching?
I'll go first. Why not?
Please.
I'm watching Maid on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
The miniseries with Margaret Qualley.
Qualley. And her mum.
And her mum, Andie MacDowell.
Yeah.
Really sort of vivid portrayal of poverty and how hard it is to get out of it.
I still haven't watched that show. I really want to, though.
Yeah, it's really worth it. I mean, it's heavy subject matter, obviously. It's very intense. But there's also, like, a certain lightness and fun to it as well that makes it, like, always engaging to watch. And it's really true, too. I mean, some of the situations she's in, I've actually kind of had to struggle with this year as well.
Mm.
Like, I recognized it.
Yeah.
And obviously, like, it's a different situation she's faced with. It's about, you know, domestic abuse and stuff like that. But yeah, really 100% recommend that.
It came out a couple of years ago, didn't it?
We did, 2021.
Yeah.
I just kind of, you know, on Netflix, sometimes you find stuff.
Yeah.
And, yeah, well worth the watch. I got one episode left.
There you go.
And, watching The Penguin.
Oh yeah.
Spin-off of, the Matt Reeves, The Batman. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a really fantastic mob drama.
Colin Farrell is just...
Yes.
You wouldn't have thought that, oh, we could do a spin-off series about that character and have it be like really compelling like it's a great character, sure, but
just a bit player in the Batman.
He's only like in it for I think like 20-30 minutes or something like that in total.
But it does confirm to me that like the Batman was held back by its rating. Like it should be The Penguin is fully, like, R-rated.
Oh, yeah. There's blood and sex and drugs and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, they're allowed to just go full out with it. And Kristen Milioti as Sophia Falcone.
Yeah.
Wow, like, what a fucking performance.
Incredible. I just watched the first episode of The Penguin last night. Episode's out.
Yeah, Monday. Yeah. Can't wait.
There's some weird, like, little face twitches that she does.
Yeah, she uses her huge eyes to wonderful effect.
She's got great eyes, yeah.
Yes, wonderful
eyes. I've loved her. Obviously, I was a fan, not obviously, but I was a fan of How I Met Your Mother until the last season went.
And she lived up to that hype as the mother.
For like, 9 years or something like that?
It was,
about, oh, the mother, oh, she was so amazing. And then she rocks up, you're like, oh, you know, I believe it. I would fall in love with you too.
She is incredible, yes.
Yeah. Then Palm Springs was my favorite movie.
I heard she was good in that
of 2020.
Too.
Have you seen it?
No.
I saw that, I think, 4 times that year. It was like the perfect sort of feel-good type movie for a year that was not filled with feel-goods type stuff. She's incredible in that as well. She's been good in other things. She was good in Wolf of Wall Street.
She was.
5 minutes she's in it.
Yeah, they had to dress her down in that movie because they had to make her look homely compared to Margot Robbie. But even then, they weren't totally successful.
Like, you put them side to side, I'm like, gorgeous. I like both. You know, Donda, you know, that. Yeah.
And but speaking of that, though, like Sophia Falcone in the comic books, she's like this hulking figure.
Okay.
So like you actually... when she's the hangman, you can really believe it. She's huge and like she's fucking, she's got like crazy strength.
Yeah.
And in this one, they're calling her the hang. She must have done that hangman stuff as well.
Yeah.
But in the comics, she was actually driven to that. Like she was driven insane after the death of her father.
Mm.
But in this show, they're making it seem like
it's beforehand.
This was like when everything was good and she was like a murderer. So I'm really interested in her backstory, which they'll explore, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And yeah, obviously she's like very slender and beautiful, but she's believably intimidating in the role.
Absolutely. There's a scream that she has towards the end of the episode that was just like,
whoa. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like you don't want to be around her.
It's definitely got the show so far. People compared it to Sopranos, I think, because...
Not really. I mean, I see why people are doing that, but it's different.
I started to think, okay, are we getting very Sopranos here when he visits his mum? when Penguin visits his mum, I was like, okay, well, how, because, you know, obviously Tony had this.
But the relationship is very different.
Exactly. And then that's where it's got sort of the trappings of it. You've got this main character who looks the way that he does. It's kind of somewhat visually reminiscent of Gandalf-y. Tony.
And he has the New Jersey accent. Yeah. I mean, you know, the Gotham exaggerated.
City. Gotham City is supposed to be in New Jersey.
Pretty much say that outright in this.
Yeah. And I think you could, if you wanted to compare it, sure. But I think what is good about the Penguin so far is that it's working inside a comic book world, but then takes it down to like the sort of deep, dark, gritty, sort of grimy levels. It's not dealing with like, you know, oh, this guy's talking to this guy and we need to go do the deal or whatever. It's just the Penguin, how he sees the world, his pride, and also how he has a little bit of sympathy for certain characters.
Well, yeah, it's a great pilot because it's like Breaking Bad. Mm. Like, you've got this guy who's like, he's you sympathize with him to like an extent.
Yeah.
And he's just really got to work his way out of a jam.
Yeah.
And that's what's fun about it. Like,
when toward the end of the episode, he says, I'm going to run this town.
He has a goal. And you believe he could like achieve it, but you also believe his enemies are powerful.
Yeah.
So that's why it, like, outside of the Batman stuff, which I love, this is just going to be a great little caper.
And that's a good thing, is that I think I could even show, like, my dad did watch the Batman.
Yeah.
But I don't think he needs to rewatch the Batman to figure out what's going on. It's just, hey, Batman did this. It shows you in the first minute. 5 minutes or whatever.
Yeah, you could totally show this to your dad and they would enjoy it.
Like, I think he's going to definitely get a kick out of it. That's kind of what I keep thinking about, is will my dad enjoy this?
Yeah.
I've been watching Agatha All Along.
Oh, yeah, I haven't seen that.
The comic book world and the other side of it. It's okay.
Yeah.
I would say it's the first two episodes where I got to the end and went, it's all right. Like, it's sort of how I felt with some of the Marvel stuff, where I watched the first two and I think, okay, you know, I'll see what happens or whatever. The third episode was very weird, and I liked that a lot. It's kind of a bit more of a bottled episode. It's set in like one house. This is the most recent episode that came out.
Yeah.
Set in one house. It's got a ticking clock. I'm like, ooh, I like that. I like when these comic book type shows feel like TV shows. That's what I loved about The Penguin, is that you can have, you know, multiple characters and sort of, you know, storylines going on or some subplots building up. You've got some backstories, some mysteries that need to be found out about certain things. You've also got, you know, oh, he wants to get to this shipment. You know, we're going to see how that plays out.
Yeah.
See where it goes from there. Agatha All Along at first was kind of feeling a bit too much like how Marvel has sometimes felt, where they take movie ideas
and chop them up
and boil them down until they're just kind of this bland six episode whatever. This, however, the third episode, it felt like watching a weird sort of like an episode of Buffy, where, oh no, we're stuck in this house and we're being poisoned. How are we going to get out of this jam? I'm like, I want to find out what happens, and what happens with it is weird and kind of cool.
I haven't seen this, but I've heard it's like a pretty good follow-up to WandaVision.
Absolutely.
Which I really liked.
Yeah.
And like Catherine Hahn is very delightful.
I'm enjoying the other characters, because there's like four or five other witches that they introduce.
Yeah.
Where at first I was like, oh, okay, you know, see it. But they all have their own backstories.
Yeah.
They've all got things going on, but they've also all got very fun presences. Like, they've got Patti LuPone, who's a Broadway legend, playing a witch. And I just think that's perfect casting. I really enjoyed her from Beau Is Afraid as well. It's just insane performance there. I'm very curious to see where it goes on. I think I'm definitely on board now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm excited to see what happens with it. As I mentioned, I also watched Lawrence of Arabia in cinemas, which was incredible, absolutely incredible. And just, you don't need to watch that movie every, you know, year or so. I watched it now twice over the last 10 years. And I think that was fitting, because it is a very long film, but it's also one of those movies where you get to the end, you go, oh yeah, I can see why that won Best Picture and is considered one of the greatest movies of all time. New films, I watched Kneecap and The Substance. That was two in one day. Kneecap's great. It's an Irish hip hop trio who sing entirely in Irish, and very weird story.
Gaelic, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's technically called, I think they just call it they just speak Irish. Some people call it Gaelic. Really? I don't know what the technical sort of terminology, why certain people call certain things, you know, it's Northern Ireland. It's not exactly the most politically safe area. It never really has been. Yeah. But that's what I love about the movie is that it says, look, everyone thinks that Northern Ireland is this, and they show, like, you know, bombings or whatever, but it's actually this. And the movie plays out as wild as it is. It was really, really good. The Substance is insane.
Yeah, I had a lot of buzz about that one.
It's great until the last 20 minutes, which honestly just kind of pushed me out and went, I'm good. It turns into a full-on... If you like splatter...
Does it turn into like schlock?
Schlock is one thing, but it turns into a full-on splatterfest. Okay. On the same... You know, if you enjoyed Terrifier, the Terrifier movies with Art the Clown, which have kind of, you know, a lot of... If you're the kind of person that has a Shudder subscription, I think you might definitely get a kick out of it, even though it's being distributed by Mubi, which I would...
Oh, is it The Substance, really?
Yeah.
I got a Mubi account.
I thought that was weird because The Substance feels like a Shudder exclusive. I mean, it's still like a good movie beyond that.
Yeah.
But the way that it ends, I was surprised. I was like, really? Mubi is going, okay, that's interesting. This is the streaming service that usually like funds or is distributing like very small, intimate, like, you know, Hong Kong dramas that go on for 3 hours or something. Like that's their bread and butter is very independent, very sort of, you know, off kilter, but very individual cinema.
Yeah, sure.
Unique in a certain way.
Yeah.
Certainly that. It's just not something I would have expected to see from them. I don't know if I was entirely a fan of it. I feel like it should have ended maybe about 20 minutes before that. There's a certain point where it gets to. I thought that would be a perfect ending.
Mm.
And then it just doesn't get... It keeps going on.
I'm re-watching, doing my annual rewatch of the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Ooh.
I'm watching it on Stan.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just like... I remember watching this as a kid on DVD.
Mm.
And they looked better. I don't know if the streaming...
I would say it's
remaster. Yeah. Like, it's got this weird green tint sometimes.
Mm. I think I've seen that sometimes.
But, yeah. And like, I remember in the Two Towers when you'd see the ring in like nighttime shots and it looked like silver.
Yeah.
And it was really cool. Like it would look shadowy, you know. But it's like with these shots now in the streaming version, they've just made it gold at nighttime.
Yeah.
And it looks just like cartoony.
Are you watching, is it the extended or theatrical?
No, the theatrical. Okay, so I'm thinking of actually buying the extended editions on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And hopefully, like, the color grading on that is better.
It's coming out at the Revival House.
Yes, I'm going to watch that for sure.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah,
I think we're gonna go. I have not much to plug, but I'll do this.
If you live in Perth, go to the Revival House in Como. Just Google it.
In Como, it's incredible place. We go there now. I think I've seen more movies there.
I've seen more movies here.
New films,
than new films.
Their new schedule just came out. It's got a bunch of Studio Ghibli films, but they're also playing like Inception as well. They're playing The Exorcist.
They play the fucking October. Classics, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They just, and on film, they do every single movie on film, on celluloid, and there's nothing like it. It will truly change how you will go see a movie there you might have seen 50 times. Like I saw Master and Commander there with my dad.
Yeah.
We've seen that movie countless times. It looked better than it ever has.
You don't know when you are watching these like classics on streaming, like I just said with Lord of the Rings or Blu-ray, how messed up the transfers get sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Like from the original print.
Well, the first movie we watched was True Lies. And that looked incredible on print.
Yeah.
And then exactly. I went back and watched.
You watch it, it looks like dog shit.
Bits of the 4K remaster.
So,
Jesus.
that's why this is really worth a shot, because you get to see the art as like it's originally been intended, you know, without all this like bullshit AI, whatever they do now to it.
There you go. Nice full circle. We started with
AI. There you go.
There we go. I think that might be a good end point for us here.
I think so.
We're next week, Joker.
Yeah, we're going to see that soon. We'll do an episode on that, I'm sure.
Fully adieu. So.
Fully adieu.
Okay. Look, it will probably definitely be better than Megalopolis.
Yeah, it definitely will.
It's not hard.
Yeah.
As for ourselves, as for this podcast, if you want to email us and ask us any questions and anything you want to say, any responses, feedback, we have an email, which is moviesarebackpodcast@gmail.com. I'm on Instagram, christopher.john95, and I'm on Twitter as well, but I don't really care about Twitter at all.
Yeah.
Where can people find you, Reese?
Can't find me anywhere. I don't use any of that shit. You can find me here.
There we go. There we go. If you want to know what Reese says,
here I am.
Listen to this podcast.
Yeah. I'm an open book, baby. Except for other forms of social media.
Social media, hey, who cares, whatever. But yeah. Keep listening to this podcast. We've got a lot of cool ideas coming up. We're going to keep going as much as we can. I think I'm going to definitely get Reese on week to week, but sometimes it might be just myself. It depends on schedules.
Yeah, I'll
or
be here as much as I can.
Exactly. Yeah. Sometimes I might just rope in my brother and just, hey, you're doing a podcast. Oh, okay, fine.
Very good.
So we'll see how that goes. We'll see you next week.
Cool. Bye.
Bye.